Bad Eds. Welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 54, Scotchy Scotch 2.0. Now, tonight we've got someone very special in the as a co-host. Robbie, unfortunately, couldn't make tonight's show. He's got some stuff going on. We welcome to our show Paul Asadorian from Stogie Geeks. Paul, thanks so much for joining the show.
Cigar Surgeon, thank you very much for having me and hosting me on the show. I'm sure you will regret it probably very shortly, but I'm ready to get scotchy and talk about scotch pairings, my friend. This is when you were like, hey, can you come on a show and drink scotch and smoke cigars? I'm like, well, yeah, of course I will. It's awesome.
Yeah, scotch and cigars just go naturally together, I think. And
absolutely.
Thanks very much for audience tuning in. Thanks very much for our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners who are out there around the world. Hope you guys are staying safe, staying warm. Obviously, you probably can't have a scotch, but I'm sure you're thinking about it. We are broadcast on CigarFederation.com and podcast and any kind of device that connects to the internet around the world. I am your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, drinking some scotch. And, you know, we shouldn't overshadow the cigar we're smoking tonight, I don't think.
Yeah, there's been a lot, obviously, said about the cigars. Very popular. Mr. Steve Sock is a great guy. He put out a great blend with the Sobre Mesa. I mean, you could just do a Google search and find out so much information about this cigar. Like, I feel like I'd just be repeating ourselves if we talked about it too much. But I'm, you know, smoking the Toro. I tend to like this in a little larger ring gauge size. And I think it has great flavors. It's funny. I don't know if you did this on purpose, John, but doesn't want to overpower the scotch or overpower whatever you're pairing it with. Like, I paired this cigar with coffee and some other things too, and it's got that great medium body and medium strength that I think is a perfect kind of pairing cigar to be in that kind of wheelhouse in terms of body and strength.
Well, I did. Now, I haven't smoked the Sobre Mesa before, but I did do some research, read some notes, read some reviews, and, you know, looking at the flavor profile and listening to Steve talk about the cigar, I thought, you know, this is a cigar you got to be a little careful with, because there are a lot of scotches out there, especially something that's maybe a really heavily sherryed scotch might run over some of the nuances of the cigar. So I thought, let's play it safe. Let's go with some little bit on the delicate side of scotch. And I say that, and I've got a cask strength scotch that I'm going to reveal about halfway through the show, and I can't wait to see your reaction. But I know Steve's huge into the Lagavulin, loves that Distiller's Edition Lagavulin, but that would be too much. That'd be way too much.
Now, John, is the Distiller's Edition, is that the one that isn't like over the top peaty?
Absolutely. It's more nuanced. And I mean,
yeah.
I think it might even be I want to say it's a single cask, but that can't be right. But it is more nuanced. I mean, instead of being in your face with a peat, it's delicate. It's still, you still get that briny, salty characteristic, you know, but if you watch our interview with Steve, I had a bit to drink. I was drinking while I was filming, which is never a good thing. And, you can kind of see the camera sort of tilt about halfway through the interview. Steve gave us like a whopping 19-minute interview, and the camera starts to tilt about halfway through, and I blame the scotch.
Well, I think, you know, drinking and podcasting goes hand in hand.
Absolutely.
Ever since I started podcasting, we've always paired it with some kind of beverage. In the beginning, it was beer, and then we kind of moved on from beer to really bourbon. And then as our palates got a little more refined, we started finding ourselves really liking scotch. And I think that what I love about scotch is, because I'm lazy, it's easy, right? You put it in a glass. Right? That's all you have to do. You don't need to put really anything in it. Now, you can put a splash of water, of course. I have the I don't know if you have the ice balls, John, or the whiskey stones, or if you use any of that kind of stuff.
Well, and I'll talk about that a little bit later on the show, because we've got a good Q&A about that. I usually stick with the ice balls when I'm going with a nice peppery bourbon, and I tend to avoid it when I'm with the scotch. But we can talk about that a little bit as we get into the show. Talking a little bit about the Sobre Mesa, I'm smoking the Corona Grande. Steve did not skimp on the Vitolas. He's got a lot of Vitolas, and I'm not going to go through all of them, because I think there's like seven different Vitolas. This is the 5.25x44 Parejo. Of course, it's produced at the Hoya de Nicaragua factory, one of my favorite companies. It's the oldest factory in Nicaragua. man, this thing has like so much tobacco in it. It's got a La Meca Ecuador and Habano Rosado wrapper. It's got the Maticapa Negro binder. And then I'm not even going to list all the filler because there's like six kinds of fillers in this thing. It's outrageous.
Yeah. You know, I liken that to cooking. And I'm not always the world's best chef, right? But I try. And I have mixed success. But when I find that where I always tend to like go down a path where I'm like, wow, that is terrible. And this is the same for cocktails too, is when I have too many ingredients, right? Absolutely. And if you add too many, it's kind of like when I play with my kids with Play-Doh and we start mixing all the colors together. And if you mix too many colors together, it just turns out this like nasty, like puke gray kind of color.
It's a big gray blob.
Yeah, and I feel like in cooking and in cocktails that, like, when I get to too many ingredients, if you don't really know what you're doing, you're going to end up with that gray blob of nasty flavors. and that's kind of the analogy that I like to use. And it takes a very skilled blender to incorporate all of those different tobaccos in the blend. Not that, you know, Steve needs me to sing his praises because a lot of people are singing his praises, and we love Steve.
Absolutely, from the heart. But I agree. I mean, whenever I see a cigar with, you know, if I see like more than four types of filler tobacco in there, I get a little hesitant because, and I think your analogy of cooking is a good one because it is like cooking where you can put too many ingredients in the pot, and then what you end up with is this flavor medley that doesn't really go anywhere. And I can tell you right now, after smoking the first inch of it, this is a phenomenal cigar. I mean, I really wish I had a chance to smoke this back in 2015, but, you know, what can you do? And I mean, for someone to be able to take that many filler tobaccos, blend them together, and make something that's fantastic, at least based on the first inch, it's fantastic. That does take a lot of skill, for sure.
Yeah, and I've smoked quite a few of these. Steve was kind enough to send both of us, Will and myself, at the Stogie Geeks, a sample pack. Well, when he felt they were ready, but even when he felt that it was ready enough to send to us in the media, he put in his package. He was like, hey guys, let these sit, man. Like, this tobacco just needs to sit and meld together. And as I've smoked them since I've gotten them, they've just really continued to get so much more balanced, right? I still get some of the great flavors, but a lot of that, I don't want to say it's youngness. I feel like it's more like the flavors are kind of just melding together and getting to be a much more balanced cigar as this thing ages. And he sent us to like last November, December or so. It was like late last year is when he sent it. And here we know the end of January. And I'm like, now it's smoking really, really good, in my opinion. It's so much, got a lot more smoothness, I think, than when I first got them. And that balance is really coming through.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting, because these are only a few months old. I unfortunately had to buy these because, you know, I wasn't cool enough to get a pack sent to me this time. But that's okay, Steve. You know, I still love you, brother.
I think since I live in Rhode Island and Steve's in New Hampshire, the shipping was really cheap, right? You're in Canada, so there's like international shipping fees. So
if Rob were on the show right now, he would go on a 10-minute rant about shipping to Canada because he's the one that always gets stuck. It's like, hey, can we send some samples? It's a hassle. Anyways, let's talk about Scotch whiskey because you know, sure. I heard you talking about Scotch whiskey on Stogie Geeks, and I know you're a Scotch guy. I'm going to start out with my first pairing here, which I call the redhead of the Scotch industry, and that's the Balvenie Doublewood 12.
Oh, it's a great choice.
I call it the redhead because everyone loves a redhead, and I've yet to find somebody who is a Scotch drinker who doesn't at least enjoy the Doublewood. I mean, you can get a more expensive bottle, you can get a more complex bottle, but this is a bottle that has a permanent place in my cabinet. Balvenie, of course, is a Speyside distillery founded in 1892. They use the Robbie Dew as their water source. It's a very famous water source, and they're owned by William Grant & Sons. What makes the Doublewood the Doublewood, the reason it's called the Doublewood, is because it starts out in an oak barrel, and then they transfer it to a first fill European oak sherry. So you get that nice sherry, tropical fruit, spicy notes to it. And it's, I mean, I could drink Balvenie all night.
Yeah, no, that's you know, there's a person who comes on our show that many people know by the name of Stogie Santa, and he's really he wouldn't call himself an expert in spirits, but he's got a great palate, and he has this unique opportunity where he works in a cigar shop that's in a liquor store. Oh. And it's almost like they compete with each other. Now, typically when people think about, well, a cigar shop and a liquor store, they're like thinking of the like neglected little humidor that you find in your, you know, like local liquor store. And that's not the case. I mean, they have like the best cigar selection coupled with the best scotch, whiskey, bourbon selection, rum selection. I mean, you name it, cognac, they've got it there. So it's a real, and it's like I could almost throw a rock and hit it from my house, which is really encourages a lot of spending when I go there. But, you know, he comes up often with a lot of recommendations. And sometimes he'll kind of go like low end and like this is good value. And then there's like medium and then there's like, you know, some higher end stuff. But this is one of his staples and he's instilled that on me. And it's one of my my staples as well. It's got a great price point to it. I think it's one of the smoother 12 years on the market.
Absolutely.
It certainly has, I think, some of the most flavor out of a 12 year that you're going to find in the market, especially for that price. Now, John, you mentioned before, like Macallan 12 year, mm-hmm. that's a great 12 year as well, but that's going to carry a much higher price tag.
Yeah, especially since the big thing in the industry now, of course, is everyone, or at least a lot of companies, are moving to new age statement. And, you know, I love to rail on them, but it's business. I mean, you can't, as an industry, you can imagine sitting on a spirit for 12 years, not making a dollar from that spirit. That's tough. Right. Now, you sit on a spirit for 15 years, man, how can you not make money for 15 years? And right. Unfortunately, the popularity of Macallan around the world is such that the minimum age statement now in a Macallan is 18, and they've got the Ruby Gold and, gosh, now I'm embarrassed. I can't remember the third one. But they had to eliminate the 12 and the 15, which was really the training wheels whiskey that got me into the Scotch world.
Interesting. So Macallan doesn't produce the 12-year anymore?
All the age statement below 18 years is gone. So if you see the 12-year on the shelf, you want to grab that.
I gotcha.
Yeah, and it, like I said, it makes sense. I mean,
yeah,
you think about these racks and racks of barrels sitting in your warehouse. You're not making money, and if you've got world demand,
mm-hmm.
you got to find a solution. It's hard to fault them. So what are you drinking for your first whiskey there?
Yeah, I as I kind of go through and drink a lot of different scotches, this is one that I came back to, and it's kind of interesting. We talk about price. I wanted to spend around $300 on a bottle of scotch just to see what the experience is like. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of research, and a lot of people recommended a lot of different things. And one of the common ones that I found when I searched in the different forums and blogs about scotch was Highland Park. And everyone said, hey, Highland Park 25, if you're going to spend $300 on a bottle, go ahead and get that. And I did. I bought a bottle of Highland Park 25. It was fantastic. You know, this year I was like, well, you know, I want to lower my price tag a little bit and maybe get two bottles of something pretty spectacular. So I did some research. Now, when I walked into the my local liquor store, is actually, you guys have seen them on the show. If you watch the Stogie Geeks, Mr. J's Havana Smoke Shop and Joyle's Liquor is where I'm talking about. This is actually where I picked up this bottle. And one of the guys at work there was like, hey, Paul, did you see the price on the 25? I said, no. He goes, it's up to over $500 a bottle. Yep. For Highland Park 25. I was like, oh my God. I said, you know, I had tried this when I was out to dinner, which is, I'll tell you that story in a minute. And I really liked it. So, and this was $134 a bottle.
It's a steal.
Yeah. The value that you get out of this bottle, if you're looking to spend around $100 on a bottle of scotch, this would be my recommendation. Now, John, you probably drink a little more scotch than I do. And probably a little more knowledgeable in the area of scotch. But for me, like when I found this, I was like, man, it's going to be hard not to always keep a bottle of this around. At that price point, it just has so much flavor. It's very well balanced. It doesn't overwhelm you with this little bit. It's got a little smokiness, little bit of peatiness, just wonderful, you know, flavor notes throughout the whole sip, you know, from start to finish. And I'm like, this scotch drinks so well for $134 a bottle. I would say I'm getting the most value out of scotch in this bottle right here. So I'm going to pour myself some more.
Absolutely. I mean, I would call that a $200 bottle that only costs you $130. That's that's to me, that's the value you're getting out of that whiskey. Just a reminder to our audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 54, Scotchy Scotch 2.0. I'm here with our special guest, Paul Acidorian of Stogie Geeks. If you haven't checked out Stogie Geeks, I don't know what you're doing with your life. Check out StogieGeeks.com. Thanks so much for our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there, wherever you guys are in the world, keeping us safe as we sit here like a bunch of goofs drinking and smoking. Thanks so much for keeping us safe. We appreciate it. And yeah, I mean, Highland Park and Macallan were like really the two whiskeys to me that got me into whiskey, because when I started drinking scotch, the first whiskey I got was like this huge peat monster, peated something or other, and it was foul. I said it tasted like diesel. It was just, it turned me off whiskey for like 2 or 3 years, and it wasn't until I went to a tasting and got into the Highland Park and the Macallan, and I thought, okay, this is a totally different tasting experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the smoothness on this 18 year is just perfect. And now I don't know if you've had the 25 year, John.
Absolutely.
How much difference do you notice between the 18 year and the 25 year?
You know, we've talked about it on the show, and you know, I say this as a guy who has some pretty ancient whiskeys in the cabinet. There is a sharp cutoff to a price point where you go $100, $150. And when you get over that $150 part, and this isn't a knock against the whiskey distilleries because they make some pretty amazing old spirit.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're paying $100 or $200 for essentially what amounts to 5% more flavor or 8% or 10% more flavor. You're not trying a Highland Park 25. And I tried the Highland Park 25. It's an amazing draft. Mm. But would I pay three times or four times as much as the 18?
Right.
No, I mean, maybe it's the Scott in me, but I'd rather have three or four bottles of 18 sitting in the cabinet than, you know, it's
absolutely. Yeah. Now you could buy three bottles of 18 year for what the 25 cost.
Exactly.
And I'm trying to think back when I had my 25 year and I'm like, I don't really notice all that much. I mean, there is differences, right? But like you said, John, there's not enough of a difference to warrant that price difference, even from 130 to 300 and change, now 500 and change. I'm like, there's no way.
No, it's collectors and people like me who hate money, who just want to throw money away and get a really expensive bottle. And you know, it's a great, like I just pulled out my Glenfiddich 30 last week to have a dram with a good friend of mine, and it was a great experience. But then the dram goes back in the cabinet and sit it back, and I'm not gonna have a pour from it for a while.
Right. Yeah. So I, you know, when I first tried this scotch, it was interesting. I was out to dinner for my day job that I work. I work in the computer security field, and we were out to dinner, and there was two of my coworkers on either side of me said they were into scotch. And I said, guys, after we've been in the office all day and an all day meeting, I'm like, guys, I need a drink. And not everyone at the table was drinking, but my coworkers next to me were like, yeah, let's get some drinks. I mean, you guys like scotch? They're like, yeah. They're like, I don't really know. Now, one of my coworkers who's on my team, my job, David, he was like, you know, he makes wine. He makes his own wine. So nice. I'm like, David, I know you have a palate. I'm like, try some scotch with me. He's like, absolutely. So, you know, I ordered the first round. I started with Macallan 12. I worked my way up to Highland Park 18. And I think I finished with a Glenfiddich 21. And we all unanimously agreed that Highland Park 18 was the one that we all liked the best. And so, I mean, Macallan 12 is pretty comparable price-wise, right, to
absolutely
Highland Park 18. The Glenfiddich 21 is going to be probably more than 130. So that was kind of like the taste test right there for me. Now, thankfully, we did not have to pick up the bar tab that evening. Although I'm expecting a call from a VP of my company questioning our probably $300 plus bar tab for the three rounds of scotch that we had. But yeah, it's all good.
Very important business was being discussed.
Business was being conducted, right?
Exactly. Just talking about the Sober Mesa, I'm about an inch and a half in now. There's this wonderful, complex, chocolatey note that's coming through. And it's like, it's almost got like a Mexican chocolate taste to it, where I get the chocolate and then it finishes with just a hint of spice. Now, I think that's probably coming from that Nicaraguan ASP. I know that ASP has a bit of kick to it, but he's got just enough in there to give it some body and some oomph without taking away from the delicate flavor profile. And it, I mean, again, you know, what a wonderful blend, going really well with the Balvenie. Although I would almost say that the cigar might actually be running over the whiskey, which is a rare thing for me, smoking a cigar to run it over the whiskey. But the whiskey for me, I've got these wonderful toffee notes, wonderful vanilla notes. And it's, I mean, what can I say? It's a Balvenie Doublewood. It's an easy drinking whiskey. I could sit here and finish off the bottle and be a happy camper. But in terms of pairing, you know, the Balvenie, maybe not as strong, believe it or not, to stand up to the flavor profile of this cigar, which surprises me.
Yeah. I see what you're saying on the chocolate notes in this cigar, and I think it's something that I haven't quite picked up on as much until they've aged up until this point. When I first smoked them, I wasn't picking up so much of those chocolate notes, but I think as it has time to rest, those flavors are really coming to the surface. And we've seen that with a lot of cigars that we smoke. I mean, we review 700 plus cigars a year, you know, on Stogie Geeks, and we try and talk about, hey, look, like the point in time in which we review a cigar is a point in time in that cigar's life.
Yep.
And, you know, especially when we do our top 10 list, top 25 list, like there are cigars that we'll go back and smoke and that will rank higher. And we try and adjust our rating scale. So this is certainly one that is moving higher up on my ranking scale as the cigar ages. And we said that because Steve told us that it was going to do that. And I, you know, props to him for doing that and being honest and saying, hey, let this rest kind of thing. So I see what you're saying with those chocolate notes. I'd be hard pressed to find a cigar that maybe doesn't pair well with this scotch because it's just, you know, it's not like overpowering in your face kind of flavors going on with the Highland Park 18.
There you go. So that's a pairing challenge for our audience. You got to find a cigar that does not pair well with Highland Park 18. It might be an expensive pairing challenge, but that is the challenge that has been issued to you.
Oh, because there's just, there's wonderful caramel notes, especially when you first take a sip. I almost get like a little bit of a citrus note on the finish, but it, you know, they're subtle and it just it complements the cigar very well.
Yeah, that Highland Park has so much depth to it, and I think the thing to keep in mind, especially with the older whiskeys, you got to give it its time. You know, it's when you like when you're smoking a really higher end cigar, a really well blended cigar, you got to give it its due. You got to give it some attention because right. If you don't, you're gonna, you know, if you're just smoking it while you're golfing, you're not gonna be paying attention to the cigar at all. I'm going to get into some audience questions here because we've got some audience questions. And I think there's an interesting first one from Rob Levine. And Rob's question, he says he wants to put us into the squabble, which is interesting. He says, what's the best way to enjoy scotch? Do you enjoy or prefer your scotch neat with a drop of water or with ice? Paul, since you're the guest, I'll let you go first, brother.
Sure. You know, I'm not a confrontational kind of person. Unless you like work for me, right? Or we're in business together, which it's all good at the end of the day. But I kind of do all three, right? And I think that there are some, if we're going to talk just scotch, right, we'll keep the just scotch because this is the scotchy show. Some I like to put a drop of water in. Some I may take an ice cube from your freezer, which I know, like iced and scotch, oh my God, people are probably freaking out right now. I'll take an ice cube and I'll put one in, right, for scotch, and I'll see how that does. I've got, you know, from the various birthdays and Christmas, right, I've got gigantic ice cubes that you can buy those silicone trays.
Oh, I love those.
Where they come sit. I like those if you have a lot of people over and they're all drinking scotch. You got a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
So the silicone tray, they hold six. I like those. I like the Williams Sonoma makes one that's like a ball. It's a pretty good size ball too. It's not quite as big as a baseball, not as small as a golf ball. It's somewhere in between. Williams Sonoma makes those. I have two of those. Those are really awesome. So I'll try, and I find that scotch will drink differently depending on what you do to it. And maybe that depends on my mood, you know? Like maybe I want it neat because I want all that flavor and I want a little bit of that sharpness. I want a little bit of bite on my palate. Or I want all of that peatiness. I find when you take an ice cube or a scotch ball or whatever it is and you put the scotch over it, it tends to lessen that peatiness. So I may enjoy it that way as well. Sometimes I will drop a little. I find the like higher end when I go 21 plus, that's when I may drop in a little bit of water to open it up and enjoy it that way as well. One thing that I'm not really a huge fan of though, so I guess I will take a stance on something about like how you take your scotch, right? Well, there's two things. One, don't kill it with ice, obviously. I mean, you always have those family members or friends that are like, oh, I need to have like a ton of ice in it. And I'm like, dude, you're getting my bourbon. Like, you're not getting my scotch if you're going to kill it with ice. Like, there's just no way. Or like, I'll sneak in something else, like tequila or something, or, you know, something like that.
Yep.
The thing that the scotch rocks, the little cubes that are stone.
Yep.
I'm just not a huge fan of those, dude. I don't know what it is. Like, I put three of those in the bottom of the glass, and I tried all kinds of different scotch with them, and I'm like, yeah, it's cold for like the first sip or two, and then it's just warm. And then it's like you can't really twirl it around good, and then like the rocks like hitting you in the face when you're drinking it and stuff. And it's like this rocks literally being thrown at my face.
Absolutely.
While I'm drinking my scotch. And I'm like, I got a ton of those things, and I'm like, because then once you use them once, like then you got to put them back in the freezer, and you got to, if you want to do it again, like you need more rocks. So I got to fill my freezer with rocks.
Yep.
And like, I got glasses and vodka that can go in the freezer too and give me, you know, some enjoyment from that. So I don't know how you feel about the, the whole question, John. I'm curious to hear what you have to say between whether you drink it neat, splash of water, one ice cube, or the ice ball, and then what your feeling is on the whiskey stones.
Sure, brother. So I think first off, I just want to say, however you want to drink your scotch, as long as you're drinking scotch and you're enjoying yourself, don't let anyone be the jerk out there to tell you how to drink your scotch.
Unless you're killing it with ice, and then you're wrong.
With ice, yeah.
You're just wrong. I'm sorry.
And Jim, I was at a great tasting with Jim McEwen, formerly of Bruichladdich. He had this great, great story he told. And the abridged version is, if you got Claudia Schiffer sitting in your hot tub, why would you throw a bucket of ice on her? And he feels
right.
The same way about the whiskey.
Right.
If you get this great whiskey, why would you put a bunch of ice in it? And
I think there's some like whiskeys or bourbons in other kind of spirits that, yeah, right, drink them with ice. I mean, the bottle, what is it, Sam Houston American whiskey?
Sure.
It's like $18, $20 a bottle, whatever it is. Yeah, throw that over ice.
I agree.
Throw that over ice. But when you get into the fine scotches, that's where you got to draw the line.
Yeah, if you're dropping $130 on a really, really nice scotch whiskey, don't put ice in it. The thing with ice, beyond the fact that obviously it's diluting the spirit significantly, you're changing the temperature of the spirit, and it's going to change the quality of the spirit significantly. One of the things I do recommend is the Glencairn glasses. Now, I used to think that this was, we're going to keep it clean because we're on Armed Forces Radio Network, but I have some strong words. I said, there's no way that the glass shape changes the flavor. Give me a break.
Right.
I did a blind tasting with a tumbler with a couple different glasses. Sure enough, the Scotch glass, like a nosing glass, makes a huge difference.
I gotta get some of those, John, because I'm drinking out of a more like a rocks glass tonight. I mean, this is just, I got these fancy glasses with my initials on them and stuff. You know,
it's a nice glass.
Yeah, but this is more. I would probably made a mistake tonight in choosing a glass. This is more for like an old fashioned. Like I make old fashions in these. You can fit a lot of bourbon in here too. So drink a couple of these, you're feeling pretty good. But I think you're right. I think, what'd you call it? A nosing glass.
Yeah. Glencairn like this.
No, I agree. I did a Scotch flight, at Casa Fuente actually in Vegas, and it was all in those nosing glasses. And, that's all part of it. You know, you get in the nose when you sip it and stuff like that. I agree. Those are great glasses to use.
One of the things that was recommended to me, and unfortunately, I can't remember the distillery that told me this, but instead they said, instead of adding water to your whiskey, because unfortunately once you add water, you can't take that water away, is you take a little sip of water in your mouth, and you kind of put a little bit of water in your tongue, then take a sip of whiskey.
There you
go. Experiment with different whiskey concentrations and different water concentrations without changing the spirit that's in your glass, because of course once you add that water, you can't take it away. So I would say if you want to try water, by all means. I mean, water can change a whiskey significantly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the takeaway statement is drink it the way you like it. Just don't throw a bunch of ice into it. Have some respect for the distillery.
Yeah. Now, do you use the ball, like the big giant blocks of ice?
Yeah, I find, I usually stick to bourbon when I'm doing the big block of ice. And I've got, as you say, I've got these silicone ball makers, and they make this really giant ball, and I find that what's nice is it chills the bourbon nicely, and it doesn't melt very quick because it's a sphere.
Yeah, I'll use those in my kind of like lower end scotches, I'll use the block of ice. Never like anything like pretty much 18 year plus. I probably won't use that the ball of ice in it. But I will use it for my kind of like lower end scotches. I find it kind of takes a little bit of that bite away when you drink them.
And it's great for cocktails. Just a reminder to our audience, you are tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings episode 54, Scotchy Scotch 2.0. We are broadcast around the world on CigarFederation.com, every device that connects to the internet, and of course, our friends and our supporters on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Hope you guys are out there staying safe. I'm here with Paul Asadorian of Stogie Geeks, and we are drinking some scotch and enjoying a beautiful, beautiful cigar from Steve Sock of the Silver Mesa. I mean, talk about coming back to the industry and with a huge splash, because he made in I don't even know how many lists this year.
Yeah, his cigar was very highly rated in the online media community, which I think is great. You know, I think he did a great job with his cigar. If you're looking at my cigar and how the wrapper's flaking off, that is my failure in my way of properly humidifying this cigar. So
winter takes its toll. It's tough.
It's not his fault. Yeah, I gotta put a little more humidification in some of my humidors. I've been having an issue with that lately. So I certainly keep that in mind when I review cigars too. And I've noticed as winter has set upon us that I'm a little low on humidity in some of my review humidors. So I don't fault the manufacturer for that ever. So you learn a little about, you know, when you think the cigar is poorly constructed and when you think it's your fault. And, you know, no matter how many humidors you've maintained or how long you've been maintaining a humidor, you got to know when you're wrong, right? And sometimes you got to admit when you're wrong. And yeah, it's definitely my fault and not the manufacturer. So,
Paul, for my second pairing tonight, I have something that I know is this is the one I was talking about, and I know this is near and dear to your heart because I've listened to Stogie Geeks. I've heard you talk about it. It's Glenfarclas. Now, this is a very special Glenfarclas. This is a family cask. So this is a single cask bottling, and this is a cask strength. This bad boy is at 60.6%.
Wow.
It's a Hita, as they say. This is bottle number 299 of 607. This was purchased at Willow Park Wines and Spirits, which is a store that I frequent very often. And
What's it called, John?
This is the Glenfarclas Hita cask. It's a Hita.
Yeah, you know, in Boston, when a pitcher for the Red Sox throws a pitch really fast, we call that a Hita.
Hita. So it's at 60.6%. It's a Hita.
Nice, nice. Yeah, so, I love, you know, I would put Glenfarclas up there right with this Highland Park 18 in terms of value and flavor. I always get the different years of Glenfarclas kind of confused. The way they make their progression is kind of, it's similar, I think, to a lot of other Scotch distilleries. In they go kind of low end, medium end, and then like once you make the jump past, I want to say 25. It gets like ridiculous $400+ a bottle.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I've never, I can't afford the $400 a bottle. I mean, I could, but like I'd have to sell some cigars or maybe a car or something like that, or one of my kids. But I was actually standing in Joy's Liquor Store one day and they took an online order and the owner went over and took 6 bottles of Glenfarclas. I think it's a 30 year. That's like was $400 a bottle for one person. Yeah. I was like, props to you, dude. Like you did really well in the stock market, or like you had a really good business idea that like you cashed in on. I'm like, you know, I'm a capitalist, man. I'm like, good for you. That's awesome. But oh man, like that stuff's expensive. But is the 25, right? Is the one that's priced like 180 ish.
It's a steal. Yeah, and that's where the cutoff point is. Where
yes.
Once you go past that, it gets pretty insane pretty fast.
Right, right.
But, yeah, I mean, Glenfarclas is – I don't know what it is, but a lot of people pass by Glenfarclas. I don't know if it's the packaging or what.
I don't know, man. It's awesome.
It's like – so this is a cask-strength whiskey, and cask-strength whiskey is usually quite expensive. It's a single cask, which means it didn't get vatted from multiple casks at the distiller like most scotches do. So it comes from a single cask that they bottled just for Willow Park. And normally, you know, for something like this, your minimum price is going to be $160-$180. Mm-hmm. This came in, I think, at like $125.
Nice.
At cask strength, 60.6.
And there's a reason why it's so much higher in alcohol strength with the cask strength, right?
Yeah, they don't. So
it's not watered down.
It's
right?
not watered down.
Oh, yeah. I remember we interviewed someone that was in the industry. They owned a distillery, and he said that. And I always wondered why cask strength was. And for that reason, I'm not a huge fan of cask strength because if I have one or two of a cask strength, I'm like, dude, I'm like ready for nap time. I'm like, it's nap time. I'm going to sleep. And I want to be able to have a couple of glasses without like going to sleep afterwards, right? So for that reason, I'm not a huge fan of the cask strength style scotches.
The thing to think about a cask strength whiskey is that you can add water and you're essentially getting about 20% more beverage if you think about it in a glass. What I like about the cask strength whiskeys is that they're, especially because they're coming straight from the cask into a bottle. I mean, I know they're going with the original water source when they bring it down to 46 or 43 or 40, but you're getting all the character of that spirit, all the character of the wood, and no one's touched it. It's straight from the barrel into the bottle. So
yeah, someone in the chat saying they like Glenfarclas 12 for the price. I would totally agree with that. I think it's a great 12 year. Fantastic for the price. It's a lot of great flavor. And it's not too heavy in like one area. Like it's not really smoky. It's not really peaty. It's not really sweet. It's a very well balanced scotch for that price.
So what I'm tasting off of this scotch, and this is a great matchup of the Sober Mesa because it is cask strength, and I'm just getting this huge blast of rich toffee, and there's some vanilla. I'm trying to wrap my head around all the notes here because there's just so much to a cask strength whiskey. You kind of need to sit and have a sip and think about it. There's just elegant notes here that go on for days. Now, we talked about earlier about adding water to whiskey. Now, if you're having a cask strength whiskey, no one can fault you for adding more than a couple drops to bring that down.
Right.
In Scotland, they're not going to drink this whiskey at 60%. They're going to bring this bad boy under 50 for sure, because 60% is a lot. I mean, you can really blow away your palate at 60% pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. So now, John, I've switched my second scotch this evening. And this is, I hope I'm saying this right, Auchentoshan, right? Mm-hmm. This is an Auchentoshan. It's a three wood. And I'm hoping you can tell me more about this because I'll be honest, I haven't done my homework on this one. This was actually a gift over Christmas. This is a really, it's kind of a really thick and heavy drinking, which is why I saved it for my second. I felt like if I drank this first, it would kind of overpower the 18. It's got a lot more body, a lot more flavor, you know, more bold flavors than the 18. But this one's really good. I want to say this is around $100 or so a bottle.
I think it might even be less than that.
Is it a little less than that?
Pretty reasonably priced. Yeah.
Very, very, good scotch. And, the Auchentoshan, distillery makes a fantastic lineup. You know, we talked about Highland Park, Glenfarclas. I would put Auchentoshan in that lineup as a lot of brands that people would pass up. And not know about. It's pretty reasonably priced. Even right up to their 21 year is actually still, I think, around $200 a bottle, which for a 21 isn't horrible. Their 18 is very good. Their 12 is very good. And they've got some different ones in between there. This is a great distillery. I haven't had anything from Auchentoshan that I haven't liked. So.
Yeah. Well, so I'll just give a shout out to Auchentoshan because they make a whiskey called the Valench, which is a unique bottling that they do. I found that to be one of the best pairing whiskeys across the board for cigars. But talking about the three wood, what makes that special? First of all, Auchentoshan is one of the few distilleries out there. I think there's only like three distilleries out there that do this. They actually triple distill the whiskey. So they start with a really, really clean spirit. And then what they do is they put it, of course, in a bourbon cask. So, you know, that's pretty standard in the Scotch industry. But then they go Pedro Ximénez sherry. And Pedro Ximénez has this really great, rich, peppery quality to it with stewed fruit. And then Oloroso sherry on top of that. And sherry casks are extremely expensive, especially now, as no one in the world drinks sherry. But yeah, your assessment of that versus the 18. The 18 is a very nuanced whiskey, and the Auchentoshan is much bolder. It's got a lot more body.
A lot of fruit, sure. A lot of fruit notes. It's a lot more. It's got a syrupy kind of component that coats your palate, whereas the 18 is kind of light, and that those fruit notes really come through, almost like a cordial cherry kind of sweetness that really coats your palate very well. So it's pretty bold. I really like it. As I said, you know, I would save this for kind of later on in the evening kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a whiskey that I would call like a dessert whiskey almost, because you can pair that with a lot of cakes and maybe some ice cream.
Yeah. It's one that I probably should have had the scotch ball with, actually, because it would kind of cut that, you know, syrupiness a little bit and a lot of that sweetness.
So I'm sipping away on my Glenfarclas here, and I've poured way too much because I forgot that it was cask strength and poured myself a generous, which I'll probably finish off later. But, you know, it's caramel and toffee in a glass, and it's got legs for days. It's got flavor for days. And believe it or not, it's only a 10-year-old whiskey, but because they bottle it at cask strength, you get so much character out of it. And this definitely stands up nicely to the cigar. I think this is probably at the same level of body and strength that I want to pair with a Sober Mesa without running it over. So, you know, the Sober Mesa, I get all these other flavors. And you know, when you're talking about saltiness, I am actually getting some saltiness out of the cigar now, which I wasn't picking up earlier.
Right. Yeah, I'm finding that this Auchentoshan 3-Wood is somewhat overpowering the Sober Mesa at this point. I'm losing some of those subtle flavors that I was picking up before on the Sober Mesa because it is so heavy and thick. And just so you know, I didn't prepare as much as I should have for this show. I apologize. I just went into my liquor cabinet and pulled. I actually, to be honest with you, John, I only had 2 bottles of scotch in my liquor cabinet. Oh, wow. Scotch doesn't last very long around here with myself and my friends and my family coming over all the time. Mostly me, because I drink it. So the last one I have is actually a cognac, which I'll talk about, which kind of drinks more like a scotch than it does a cognac. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, when we were drinking scotch, I poured everyone a little bit of this cognac, and they kind of thought it was scotch, like it's a very scotch-like cognac. So I'm curious to see what I didn't drink very much of it so far, so I kind of want to give it the taste test tonight. But this 3-Wood is really, really heavy on the palate.
Yeah, 3-Wood is definitely very much in your face. It's, you know, we talk about body. It's got a lot of body to it. And the Sober Mesa is very nuanced. It's got a lot of layers to it. So, when I was sitting down looking at different scotches that might pair with it, it's tough because you don't want to run over the cigar. And I think really we're trying tonight to feature the cigar more than we are the spirits. I'm going to hop into another audience question here. We got a good question from Bob Dog. Bob Dog is a frequent participant in questions here, asked some good questions. And this is a good one. He says, even with no age statement, spirits are otherwise known as NAS now. Doesn't Scotch legally have to be aged at least 3 years to be considered Scotch whiskey? And that's actually true. It's true in the bourbon industry. It's true in the Scottish whiskey industry, is that there's a minimum age that it has to be in a barrel before it can be considered Scotch whiskey, and that is 3 years. So even when it's a no age statement, when they don't say what the minimum age is on that whiskey, it has to be at least 3 years. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's been a lot of discussion about Scotch whiskey and the sort of going away of a lot of companies of age statements. And again, that's an economic thing. Some companies can't keep up with the demand, and they have to move some of their portfolio. We talked about it earlier with McCollin. They've had to move some of their portfolio to no age statement. That's just the reality of the business. Does that mean you're getting a bad Scotch? No, you can still have a no age statement whiskey that might have 21 year or 18 year or 20 year whiskey in it, but what it frees them up to do is to say, well, I'm going to blend this for a flavor, and I'm not constrained by saying, well, it's a minimum. The minimum youngest Scotch that's in this is 10 years or 12 years or 15 years.
And I see.
Yeah, it allows them to, you know, play around a little bit with the flavor.
John, I want to ask you a question. So I've gone into my local liquor store, the one I talked about, has a great selection, and they've got a lot of merchant bottlings. And I don't pretend to know what all the merchant bottlings are, and my you know, somewhat uneducated kind of thought process to approaching buying a merchant bottling is I buy the ones with like the most dust on the top of the – usually they come in a box, right? Mm-hmm. Merchant bottlings typically come in like a cardboard box with a little cellophane window where you can see the bottle behind it. And I'll kind of like really read the label to see which distillery made that bottling for that particular merchant. And I'm like, oh, well, I like them, so I'll buy this merchant bottling. And for me, it's kind of been hit or miss. I think it's been more hit or miss than miss in my case. I've had some really, really awesome merchant bottlings that I bought. And I find that the price points are typically lower. And probably 75% of the time, the quality and the value that you get is just off the charts in these merchant bottlings. So what advice do you have, John, for those of us that can go into a store and find a lot of merchant bottlings? Like, where do you begin navigating all these merchant bottlings? And maybe for the listeners, I don't know if you've covered merchant bottlings on the show before.
You know, we actually haven't. And that's a good question, because there is, I mean, you go into a store that has a lot of product, there's so many bottles to choose from. Where do you start? I agree with your assessment that one of the nice things about a merchant bottling is that because the economy of scale, because the merchant is saying, well, I'm going to commit to X thousands of bottles from this distillery, they can bring the price down. They can guarantee the distillery is getting that sale, but mm-hmm. they bring the price down for the end purchaser, which is you, and you still get that great product. And there's a lot of merchant bottling. In fact, I think over the last couple of years, merchant bottling has gone up significantly. I think your approach is a good one. If you have a distillery that you know you like, go and seek out a merchant bottling and see if you can find something, because in a lot of cases, you're going to get a product that is unique. It's going to be a little different than what you typically get straight from the distillery, because that merchant is going for a particular flavor profile or price point for their customers. And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, as much as I like to spend $300 on a bottle of whiskey,
right?
I mean, if I can get a deal and get a great bottle of whiskey instead,
yeah,
that's absolutely.
Well, I find it interesting because it's not apparent like that Macallan, for example, or Glenlivet made this bottle for, and we say merchant, right? Yep. But it's really for this company or organization that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
But Glenlivet made this bottle for this company. And like you said, they maybe made 1,000 bottles, and it's in this box, and it's priced at $65 a bottle, and it's got like an inch of dust on the top of it. And sometimes I'll roll the dice. And a couple of times, dude, it has been, oh my God, so good. And other times I'm like, nah, that was kind of okay. But for 50 or 60 bucks a bottle, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, I haven't played. I mean, it's not that it's bad. It's just not, you know, what I'd normally drink, or, you know, it's just okay kind of thing. Kind of the same with cigars, right? You know, some are Fivers and some are Oasis. So yeah. They're never bad, but some of them are so old. Now, it does, as everyone knows, and you know, obviously, John, that once it hits the glass in the bottle, it's not aging anymore. That's so true. The fact that it has dust on it just means it's been sitting on the shelf for a long time. But the significance of that for our audience is a lot of times the retailer won't adjust for price.
That's right.
So they'll get this merchant bottling and it'll retail for $64.99, and it came out in 2001. But over time, that bottle has increased in value to $120 or $150. But your retailer's like, well, I still bought it at a good price. I'm still going to sell it at, you know, I only have 5 bottles of it, so whatever. I'm going to sell it at my $65 a bottle because I paid $20 a bottle or whatever they paid for it, and I'm going to make my money on it. And raising the price doesn't help them move it, right? Because it just makes it more expensive for a bottle that people have never heard of that don't really read the label closely. So I've gotten some awesome, awesome merchant bottlings for a reasonable price. I think I paid $80 or $90 for one. And when I took the top off, it was so old that the plastic, you know, the scotch, right? We can see it right here, right? There's a plastic cap that connects to the cork, right? Now, a bottle that's been sitting on the shelf for a good number of years, when you pull that plastic cap off, like, it just breaks away from the cork. Yep. And you're left with the cork inside the bottle. And now you've got it cut under. I'm like, what do? So you take a corkscrew and you put it in there. And as soon as you pull that corkscrew out, like, you may get about 60% of the cork to come out with the corkscrew, and the rest falls in the bottle. And I've heard people that complain. They're like, oh, I spent a lot of money on this bottle, and there's all cork in it. I'm like, dude, it doesn't affect the flavor, the taste. It doesn't affect anything. Pour it through a strainer and stop whining and drink your scotch. And I've had like some of the best bottles of scotch I've had in my life have been those merchant bottlings that have sat for a long time that when you break that off, it falls in and it's like a whole experience, you know, in a bottle. You drink a little bit of cork in your scotch and you're all good. So I don't know. I like merchant bottlings.
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head that this, it's a great way to find, like Macallan is a great one to say, because, you know, the older spirit Macallan that's out there, a lot of the times you can get a heck of a deal through a merchant bottling that might be $100, maybe $150 cheaper than what you'd buy if it was just said Macallan in the bottle. And, you know, that provides a great value for you to get the same spirit, the same quality, but at a reduced price just because it doesn't have big Macallan labeling on the bottle. And that's a no brainer. So I'm going to hop into our last whiskey as we whittle down to the last 10 minutes of our Armed Forces Radio Network segment here. I could drink, as I said, I could drink that Glenfarclas all night long, and people would, I'm sure, be very entertained. This is one of the other bottles that I think flies under the radar. It's Glenronach, and Glenronach is one of the great distilleries out there. They've been around for a very long time. First opened in 1826, ended up getting mothballed back in, I think it was 1996, and then reopened in 2002. And that's kind of the, you know, bust and boom of the Scotch industry. But Glendronach repeatedly puts out these really great malts that are very approachable in terms of flavor. But, you know, we're talking a little bit about price. They're very, very approachable on price. And, you know, they describe this as rich and creamy, silky smooth, raisins and soft fruits, some spiciness, but with a fruity finish. And that's, you know, that's absolutely my wheelhouse. This is a 12-year-old whiskey. It's kind of similar a little bit to your Auchentosh in that it's got that Pedro Ximenez sherry finish. So they've aged it in Pedro Ximenez casks. They've also done Oloroso sherry, and I love sherried whiskey. So I'm hoping it doesn't run over this Sober Mesa. I'm going to have a couple sips and you can talk about your last spirit there.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, it's interesting. We talk about like how quickly you drink or smoke, right? This 3-wood, you don't drink it as fast as the 18. The 18 man from Highland Park just goes down. This 3-wood, you drink it a lot slower because it's very syrupy. It's got a lot of body and a lot of flavor, and it's pretty potent on your palate. It almost takes you like more time for your palate to recover after you take a sip of this 3-wood than does that 18. For that reason, the Highland Park 18 is very dangerous. You get really drunk really fast, man, because that stuff just goes down, right?
Yep. That's a session whiskey for sure.
Yeah, this 3-wood is drinking a little slower. So I don't know much about this cognac. I will say that we've talked a lot about spirits that cost a lot of money, right? And I don't want to make it seem like I'm always spending like $300 or $100 on a bottle of whiskey. You can't afford to do that, dude. You know, and like why would you do that when you, it's like cigars, you know, you can find that $5 cigar that if you age it for a little while, you know, smokes just like your $10 or $15 cigar. So this is a Merlet, Brothers Blend Cognac. And this originally, you can actually see it right on here. It originally retailed for $39.99 and it was marked down to $20. So this is a $20 bottle of cognac that just drinks fantastic. It's a VSOP. And I tell you what, on a really cold night, I should have had my, you know, I had a really nice cognac snifter that, you know, you put your hand on it and you kind of warm it up kind of thing and swirl it around. I should have had that for effect on camera. That would have been really nice. But it broke. Like, as you know, most glassware tends to run the fate of whether you put it in the dishwasher or wash it by hand, man, like, you know.
Eventually it wears
it out. It just breaks or chips or whatever. But this was a $20, and this was a Stogie Santa recommendation. It was in the, like a shopping cart in like the bargain bin. at my local liquor store. And Stogie Sands like, dude, you got to try that. It's $20 bottle of cognac. And I'm like, really? He's like, really? And I'm like, dude, it is really good. It's really good. So I'm going to sip that next. I want to really pay attention because the last time I drank this was like on my birthday when I was really drunk a couple of weeks ago. So I don't really remember what it tastes like.
are you a January baby as well?
I am. I was born January 10th.
That's hilarious. I very often don't run into January babies. I'm a January baby as well. I just had my 41st on nice. January 21st. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I am 39, so we are not that far off.
We're not that far off. So I can tell you my first few sips of this this Glendronic, and we are running up against the wire here, so I'm going to get my words in quick. But it's got just this rich stewed fruit flavor. It does have that saltiness, which I know you've talked about on Stogie Geeks before. I think the nice thing about a little bit of saltiness without the peat is that it enhances the flavor of the cigar, and there's no peat there, so it doesn't, you know, peat tends to be very full bodied and it can run over a cigar very easily. What's nice about this is you get the fruit, you get that raisiny character, and then you get a little bit of saltiness, which kind of recharges your palate between draws, and it really complements the cigar fantastically.
You know, it's interesting. I would challenge even you, John, the most experienced Scotch drinker that I think I know in the planet. If you did a blind test with this cognac, I don't think you'd pick it out as cognac, dude. You may not. You may actually think that this is Scotch or some other kind of spirit and not cognac. It's so smooth. It doesn't have – like a lot of cognacs have that like overpowering sweetness. Mm-hmm. This doesn't. It just has a nice little bit of touch of fruit, little bit of touch of caramel. It drinks very much like Scotch for $20 a bottle.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, you're talking about a 50% discount off of a price of $40 down to $20. I don't care what it is, 50% off. That's a heck of a deal.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of a dry finish, which may kind of tip you off. I think if your palate's really experienced, that little bit of a dry finish might tip you off that it's cognac, right? Because cognac is coming from champagne.
Yep.
And champagne sometimes has that dry kind of finish to it, depending on which kind of champagne it is. But that's the only thing that will really tip you off. The flavors are spot on. Like I said, you know, a little bit of those caramel notes, a little bit of fruity sweetness. It's got a great nose. Really quick, my cognac story. This is another one. I was at a work outing, which is a great place to – we're at this restaurant in Vegas where you can smoke cigars. What's the name of it? It'll come to me. But it's a great French restaurant in the Monte Carlo where you can have French food, and you go upstairs and you go to this little cigar bar, and I'm like, oh, I want cognac. And I'm like, well, you know, I want, you know, whatever kind of regular cognacs there are. And they're like, no, we don't have any of those. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, they're like, we only have this other kind of like really weird cognac. And I'm like, you know what, dude? I'm like, we're going to have like three drinks. I'm like, you pick them all out. And he walked us through three rounds of cognac. He started out mild to medium to full while we had our cigars. It was one of the most outstanding pairing experiences I've ever had in my entire life, John, which is why I want to mention it on the show. And I don't remember the name of the cognac. I know that it's the restaurant in the Monte Carlo where they have a cigar lounge. These cognacs were absolutely amazing. Amazing. And this is another one where it's three people and it was upwards of $400 for the bar tab. Thankfully, company's paying for it, right? And it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. The flavors that you got, they were all so smooth. They had their own characteristics. It was like this whole journey of flavor and spice and all these wonderful sensations. The nose on all of the it was so awesome.
Like we're going to have an on-site sharing our pairings episode in Vegas when we're all down for the IPCPR. It sounds like that restaurant is the place to have it. Quick definitely hits, and I think I probably know the answer to this. Favorite pairing of the night so far?
Yeah, the Highland Park 18, dude. I would put that at any cigar, without question. How about you?
I'm going to have to go with the Glenfarclas. I mean, Glenfarclas on its own is fantastic. Cask strength of Glenfarclas is no-brainer. This Glendronach is a great second runner-up. Again, I would drink the Balvenie all day long, but I think it's just not the right matchup with the cigar. I'm about halfway through the cigar. I'm really enjoying it. We're going to talk a little bit more about that on our After Dark segment. I want to thank our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. Again, you guys are out there keeping us safe, doing things that we aren't designed to do. We're sitting here drinking scotch and smoking cigars. You guys are out there protecting us. Thank you very much for your sacrifice.
Yeah, John, can I just say thank you to all of our armed forces? Thank you for your service, everyone. We appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. And make sure to tune in this Thursday for Cigar Chat. I'm going to be co-hosting as Logan is away on travel. And we'll be back next week on Sharing Our Pairings. Make sure to check out Stogie Geeks at stogiegeeks.com. If you don't check it out, you're wrong. And you got to check out your local podcast app. If you're not watching it live, it's on every podcast app out there. Thanks for tuning in to Sharing Our Pairings episode 54, Scotchy, Scotchy, Scotch. We'll see you guys next week.
Drink thanks, better,
John. But drink less. All right. We're back.
Now, do you guys post the after show?
So what we do is because we're still live, so we post the full segment on our podcast and on YouTube, and then we cut this segment for Armed Forces Radio Network just for the radio network listeners.
So I can like say fuck now and stuff.
Yeah, fuck shit, cockballs. That's how Rob usually does the cigar chat. Logan is such a calm guy. And what's funny is he's kind of like me. He likes to throw out the F bombs now and again. And it's funny when we have cigar chat and we get like Eric Espinosa on there or someone, you know, it's tough to not to drop an F bomb, but the Armed Forces Radio Network really frowns upon swearing. You can shoot people, you can get deployed anywhere in the world, but you can't swear.
Hey, figure. You know what? They defend our freedom, so
that's fair.
They can do whatever the fuck they want. Smoke a lot of cigars while they're deployed.
So, I don't know if you not last year in New Orleans, but in 2014, Robbie and I were in Vegas. This is a war story, as it were, a Scotch war story. And I was talking to him about various scotches that I enjoy pairing and. He and I sat at a bar in the not so great, I can't even remember the hotel we were at. It's this really, really terrible hotel. it's a terrible hotel. But
the worst hotel is Circus Circus, dude. I think Circus Circus is a shithole.
I don't think we were at Circus Circus, but we were like the Circus Circus equivalent. Because we waited too long to book. We're at the end of the
strip. So you were like at like the Palms or something.
Yeah. It's wiped from my memory because it was just such a
terrible experience. It's not the Palms. The Flamingo. Flamingo is the one across the street from Caesars. That's a piece of shit too.
But what I got to say is that we were at the bar and we were, I was like, let's get some scotch. We're in Vegas. Let's have some scotch in Vegas. And the bartender was like, what do you guys want? And I'm like, I want this particular scotch. He says, okay. And I said, well, take a pour. And I swear the guy was pouring 3 to 4 ounce pours as a single pour. Like he was pouring a glass half full. And I think Robbie and I ended up finishing off half a bottle of this whiskey. And we couldn't smoke at the bar, which is a bit of a shame, but man, the scotch went down pretty easy.
Vegas is a crazy place, man. I've been there more times than I can count.
What are your thoughts? I mean, we're going back to, of course, we're going back to Vegas for the IPC bar in 2016. New Orleans was a lot of fun, but there we go. Cigar Coop. Will. Stratosphere. What's up, Will? Stratosphere. See, you know, you can't get anything past Will. I can't even remember the name of the hotel. Will's in chat, mentions the Stratosphere.
Dude, Will's spot on, man.
Yeah, spot on. The Stratosphere. It was a terrible hotel. Horrible hotel, but the bartending service there was absolutely out of this world. So, we're going from New Orleans back to Vegas. What are your thoughts on that? Before we talk about football, I know you kind of don't want to talk about football. We're gonna talk.
We're okay talking about football, dude. I think it's a good thing for, well, to speak specifically to the IPCPR. I think it's a good thing to go back to Vegas. I think it's a much more smoker friendly environment. I think it's the right environment for IPCPR. When I look at Orlando and New Orleans, having personally visited those places numerous times, as well as Vegas, I think that the most smoker-friendly atmosphere is to be found in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I think that to have the IPCPR in a city that is the most smoker-friendly is the way that the industry should go. And I think we should support the city that's going to support us. And, you know, I've never gotten a funny look for having a cigar in Vegas, dude. I mean, yeah. Even in places where they're like, cigar smoking is kind of frowned upon kind of thing. Like, they're like, no, dude, it's cool. Like, you're in Vegas. You know what yeah. I mean? So to have a town that really supports that, like when you're at Casa Fuente and I'm like, dude, I'm staying in this hotel at Caesars and I'm like, you guys are closing down. And I'm like, I'm not done with my cigar. I paid a lot of money for my cigar. I'm like, what do I do? They're like, dude, just don't puff on it like obnoxious and walk back into the casino yep. and you'll be fine. I've been to Vegas over a dozen times for several years now because computer security has all our, like a lot of conferences in Vegas.
Yep.
So sometimes, some years I've been there three times just for computer security. I've never had a problem smoking in Vegas, dude. Never had a problem. I mean, one time we got into a cab and the cabbie was like, hey, there's no smoking in my cab. I'm like, no, dude, we're not smoking. We just reek because we're at a cigar lounge. And he's like rolling the windows down. That's like the closest I've ever come to like having an issue in Vegas. So, I think to have it there is the right choice.
And I think the two things that I really like about Vegas, and you're right, Vegas is probably the most cigar-friendly place, maybe in the United States, maybe. I mean, Arizona is pretty cigar friendly, but Vegas is fantastic. I'm looking forward to the Rum Bar. That's like my favorite place to go.
Yeah, Rum Bar is awesome. That's the outdoor one, right?
That's the outdoor one on the roof.
I had a party there when I was for my day job company. We had a cigar party, actually, and I did the cigars for the cigar party. I had some awesome cigars. I mean, I had like cigars for everyone to hand out when we got there, and I had like cigars for like all our C-levels and VPs and shit. And people loved it. It was like a huge success. It's one of my like as far as integrating cigars into my day job, one of my most shining moments is when like they were like, Paul, you're in charge of the cigars for the party kind of thing. We're having a cigar themed party. And the founders of my company are really into cigars. So Rum Bar is great. Now the problem is smoking outside in Vegas is problematic because it's so dry.
It's hot.
That's the only problem.
I mean, it's going to be July. It's going to be hot. I mean, you know, the joke is, and everyone likes to say, it's a dry heat, man, but it's hot. Like you're talking like
it's like smoking in an oven, dude.
Yeah.
And your palate's just so dry, it can impede on the flavor. So
yeah,
that's the only problem that I see.
Now talking about hot, I mean, when we were in New Orleans, That was ridiculously hot. And the problem
but too humid is the same way, right? You can't taste when you smoke when it's too humid either.
No, it's miserable. I mean, I can take a lot of dry heat, but there's a point, you know, if you've been down to Nicaragua, and I know you've been down, that strikes this perfect balance between it's just hot enough and just humid enough without being unpleasant. New Orleans in July,
dude,
that's so unpleasant.
Even Florida, though, Florida's like a great environment to smoke cigars certain times of the year.
Yeah.
And I usually go to Florida in the spring for conferences.
Yeah.
Florida in the spring, man, that is like, maybe that's why some of the cigars I smoke there have just been so good. Like I smoked my first Winston Churchill Robusto from the newer version of the Winston Churchill. It was just so good. And I think just because it was like you're smoking in a humidor, right? Like you're smoking in 70 degree weather when it's 70% humidity. Like it's perfect outside.
Yeah. Robbie and I have talked about that on the show before because I like to go down to Nicaragua all the time. I like to go to Cuba all the time.
Mm.
And there's no question in Mexico, there's no question in my mind that at that that's the perfect balance between temperature and humidity. And there's no question that cigars taste better in that environment. Like I can taste so much more going on in a cigar, and it's got to be tough on the cigar manufacturers to take a cigar. It's smoking great. You're confident in the blend. You take that cigar to Miami, all of a sudden the whole profile changes on you.
Well, and then you take a cigar here in New England, dude, and like I'm having a tough time reviewing cigars right now because my office is comfortable, right? Like in my office, it's 70 degrees. Now, admittedly, it's like probably 20 or 30% humidity, but temperature-wise, it's comfortable. So I'm smoking. I have the luxury. I'm very lucky that I get to smoke inside. But maintaining my humidors, man, is a chore. And when I smoke and review, I'm like, I can tell this cigar is just not right. And it's not like, so I just lit up the Corona size in Steve's line. What is that? The Corona Grande, 5 1/4 by 44. This is the one that you lit up.
So great.
Now, this one's smoking way better than the first one. And this came from the same humidor, the same Ziploc bag that had the same Bavita packs in it.
Yep.
And this one's smoking a little better. So, it's total environment, man. And, like, maintaining the humidors in the winter in New England, it's a chore. It's a chore. Not just in the winter, but because there's such drastic temperature and humidity changes all the time. And, like, the joke in New England is, if you don't like the weather in New England, like, just wait till tomorrow. So true. Because, like, you know, right now, actually today was pretty warm. And the humidity was a lot higher. But, you know, go back a couple of days, dude. It was 20 degrees and it was like zero humidity outside. Yeah. So, you know, those drastic changes just wreak havoc on your cigars.
Yeah, I mean, we did a show a couple of weeks ago for sharing our pairings, and I think it was about -5 degrees freedom. And my beers, we were doing a beer show. My beers were actually freezing in the glass as we were doing the pairing show. Yeah. Today, all of a sudden, like you say, wait a few hours, it's 50 degrees.
Right.
Like, I know I'm bundled up. Man, it's 50 degrees. 50 degrees to me versus -5. Forget about it. Like, that's
right.
That's beautiful. That's like springtime.
Yeah, it's hard, man. I mean, you can get a humidor that will maintain temperature and humidity, and that's like the ultimate utopia of humidors, right? But get one that holds a couple thousand cigars, dude. That's like $4,000 or $5,000 to get a humidor to that level. I mean, Winadors, I'm all for Winadors. You can get one that works for you. That's great. That, you know, they're not really designed to do that, but if you can hack one to do that, I'm totally all for that. To get one that is designed from the ground up to be a temperature controlled humidor, you know, you're looking at thousands. They start at like $1,200, dude. And that's a lot of money for something that you can't smoke or drink, right? I have one. I have a cabinet that does temperature and humidity, and I can't afford more than one, dude. Like, I can't see myself investing in more than one. So, like, you gotta put some work into your humidors. And lately I'm noticing, as much experience as I've had with humidors, like, it's just constant work. I mean, ask Will, man. Will, who was in the chat earlier, right? It's a constant battle. We're constantly shipping cigars to each other. Manufacturers are shipping us cigars. Where do we store them? How do we store them? Not only, like, how do you make sure that they're being stored right, but, like, how do you organize it and make sure they're being stored right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, like, it's a nightmare, dude. And in North Carolina, where he is, it's the same thing. Like, his humidity is 100% in the summertime. So when I get cigars from him in the summer and it's 100% humidity here, I'm like, what do I do with these, dude? Like, how do I even dry them out? Do I put them in the refrigerator for a little while to dry them out? But, like, that's not good either, because those drastic changes are bad. So,
yeah, and I'm in the same boat living in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I ended up over time, especially, you know, as you say, you get more samples and you want to give those samples the best chance to rest and be at the right level. I had to invest money in a climate control cabinet. Now I have a climate control cabinet and I have a corner cabinet just for my Cubans. But I mean, man, that's a big financial investment. I would not expect the average guy out there to be able to drop that kind of money. You know, you want to spend that money in cigars. You don't want to spend that money in storage.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have one in my house, but I don't have one in the studio where I have to store a lot of my cigars. So I have two coolers that I use primarily Bavita packs and beads in, but I'm noticing through the summertime it was okay, because I actually find that, like, the Bavita packs and the coolers tend to keep a lot of that humidity out, and in the spring, through the summer, and the fall, I'm fine. It's the winter that I'm having the most problems with my cigars in those coolers, so...
There's a really cool YouTube video that there's a NASA engineer that posted on YouTube, and he was talking about the amount of water that could be held in air at a certain temperature. And it was really interesting to me because it was a good visualization. He showed, I think it was about 30 degrees freedom. And he said, like, it was basically a cup of water. And he's like, this is the amount of water humidity that can be held in air at this temperature. And I'm like, that seems like nothing. And he's like, here's what, you know, it's 70 degrees freedom. Here's how much water can be held in the air at this temperature. And it was like 40 glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, yeah, that's exactly right. The problem with, you know, it's a double whammy when you live in a cold environment. You get cold weather, humidity levels drop. It's really hard on cigars. Very, very hard on cigars.
Yep.
So we should probably talk about football now. You and I are kind of...
Let's talk about football.
All right. Now, Robbie and I have been talking about football all year, and I'm a dirty, dirty Jets fan. How a Canadian becomes
That's fine, dude. You can be a Jets fan. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we're rivals and all. Just so people know, I'm from Rhode Island. I've been a Patriots fan my whole life, dude. You know, I was... My New England sports, just to give some background, my New England sports history goes back to when I was... I was nine years old in 86, 1986, right? And if you were a New England sports fan in 1986, at 9 years old, dude, like sports is like important, right? Like I played Little League my whole life. So I watched the Red Sox lose the World Series to the Mets. I watched the New England Patriots lose to the Bears in that year too. So like I was a devastated 9 year old boy watching my, you know, home teams lose. And then you fast forward to early 2000s, and now I'm seeing the Patriots win. Now I see the Red Sox win their first World Series. And I look at the past 15 years and I'm like, dude, I'm high. When it comes to sports, man, like I'm high in life for a lot of reasons. Like sports in the past 15 years is like one of the highlights in my life after going through all I went through in 1986, you know. Yeah. So I've been a New England fan, you know, my whole life, Celtics, Bruins, the whole nine yards. So, you know, I've always been a Patriots fan. I'm not, I'm upset about the loss, but I'm not ashamed of anything the Patriots have done. For my whole life, I'm not ashamed, of really anything. And I thought we played a great game, but I thought Denver just played a better game, you know, there's nothing we can really complain about. And we can complain about our offensive line and that's fine. Yeah. They didn't play their best game, but you know, you got to live with it, man. Like it's any given Sunday, man. Like, you know, sometimes some teams have a better defense and they prey upon your weaknesses. And I'm not saying our offensive line was our only weakness, but, you know, it was a tough game for us and, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
You know, so we were talking a little offline before we started the show and I said, as a Jets fan, obviously there's a lot of rivalry between the Jets and the Patriots, and I have mad respect for the Patriots. And, you know, it's hard for me to see the Patriots because I think they, in a lot of ways, the tough thing about football is that you deal with injuries, and the toughest thing that faced the Patriots this year was they had an okay offensive line.
Yeah.
And it was just like injury after injury after injury. And like Robbie and I were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, and I said, like, at this point, Bill Belichick's pretty much starting a pile of boxes at offensive line, because literally they're like five players deep at the offensive line. It's that bad. And there's nothing else wrong with the team. Like, special teams is great. Offense is great. Defense was firing on all cylinders. But if you can't protect your quarterback, man, that's a crucial part of the game.
Not only that, like, we lost receivers and running backs too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we had kept, like, Deion Lewis, you know, and, like, Gronk and Edelman stayed healthy all season,
oh man,
we might have been able to overshadow some of those problems on the offensive line.
Dude, Edelman was killing it.
When you go through those fits and starts of like losing your top running backs and receivers and then having some offensive line problems, like it starts to be problematic, dude. And I'm not saying our coaching staff is perfect. Like, Belichick is the greatest coach of all time. Like, I'll stand behind that. But he's not perfect. Like, he made some mistakes, not just this season, but he's human, dude. He makes mistakes, you know, and you can Monday morning quarterback Belichick or Brady all day long, but you're not putting yourself in that situation. Like, we see the outcome of the game and we're like, yeah, I probably would have made this decision, but like, dude, he doesn't have a time machine. He can't fast forward in the future and see what's going to happen. Like, you know, he made decisions, and sometimes, you know, most of the time, the coaching staff makes the right decisions when it comes to Belichick and and everyone else. But, you know, sometimes he doesn't. You know, hey, should we have kicked a field goal at a certain point in the Broncos game? Well, yeah, you can look back at that and say, yeah, sure, we should have. But, you know, they didn't know what the outcome was going to be when they decided to go for it. So, you know, whatever. I think Belichick gets a lot of shit because he presents himself as an asshole. Let's be honest. He presents himself as an asshole. So people don't like him. But an
entertaining asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Brady gets a lot of shit because everyone thinks he lives like the perfect life with Giselle and his mansion and in the whole nine yards and whatever.
Let's be honest. That doesn't sound too bad.
No, it doesn't. Right. I mean, okay. So you lost. But it's interesting. Say what you will about Brady, Belichick, the Patriots, the whole nine yards. When you look at since the salary cap was put in place in, what was it, 94, I think, Patriots have 4 Super Bowl wins.
Yeah.
Like, after that, there's only 2 or 3 teams that have 2 Super Bowl wins. I think it's the Giants and someone else.
Steelers, I think,
yeah. And then after that one Super Bowl win, it's like maybe half a dozen teams. So you look at that accomplishment after the salary cap, like, it's just one way that I've seen it measured that I'm like, that's a really big accomplishment. And again, I'm coming from like, look, dude, I was in 1986 when, like, you know, baseball and football in New England, like, we were all frustrated to all hell. So when you see stats like, well, the Patriots aren't in the Super Bowl, so, like, tickets are down and viewership's coming down. Because, dude, people in New England are friggin' excited about their team. Because a lot of us have been there through the shit, man, and we're, like, so excited that our team is playing well and been to so many AFC championships, have been to so many Super Bowls and won so many Super Bowls.
So I think what's funny to me is, obviously, I'm an AFC fan, Jets fan, and my picks all year were, you know, I did pretty good in my pick and pool. When I did the playoff picks, I missed a bunch. I didn't pick the Steelers winning. I had KC winning, and I had the AFC championship to me was a KC versus New England matchup, which I think would have been really exciting. What's funny is that the NFC, which is not my league, not my conference, I had the NFC in the playoffs, like, down to a science. Like, I had the Seattle winning by hair. I had the Panthers, or pardon me, the Carolina Panthers. Yeah. This is what happens when you have a bunch of cask strength whiskey. I had the Panthers winning, and I had them, you know, being dominant. And, you know, I said, look, it's going to be down to the Panthers and the Cardinals. And I just think the Panthers are just too dominant on offense. And there's no way it's not the Cardinals' year. I think the Cardinals are a great team, but it's not their year. And so now we're faced with, you know, ultimately, as a football fan, this is a great playoff. It's a great Super Bowl. You got the Broncos versus the Panthers. What's your take on the Super Bowl coming up in a couple weeks here?
If I were to put money on it, dude, like, I would put money on Carolina.
Absolutely.
But if I have to, like, go with my emotions, it's interesting. Like, my dad moved to North Carolina, and over the years, he slowly converted to a Carolina fan, which just makes me hate Carolina now. Because I'm like, how could you do that to us and, like, be a traitor? And it makes me want to root for Denver, right? Emotionally. And then emotionally, I'm like, there's Von Miller going, well, I wanted to put my balls in Brady's face, and I want to, I caught the, you know, I intercepted and the ball felt deflated, which is just total bullshit. And I'm like, dude, you were suspended, Von Miller suspended for 6 games for drug use. Mm-hmm. Like, who are you to talk about cheating? Like, come on now. So, you know, and I know that's just one player on their team, and it's probably not a representative of their team because their defense played great, and I'm sure they're all great players. And I know Peyton's been accused of using the HGH, and, like, whatever. Like, I have the utmost respect for Peyton, and I'm not holding that against him. I more hold it against the media for the way they treat certain teams, like they shit all over Brady because the Deflategate thing, but they give Peyton a pass because it was reported by Al Jazeera they was using HGH. Like, I don't fault Peyton for that at all, dude. Like, who knows? For all we know, his wife could have really used that drug to be healthy. Like, that's the dude's wife, you know what I mean? And Peyton's never said anything bad about the Patriots, never said anything bad about Brady. Brady says never says anything bad about anyone, let alone Peyton Manning. So, and it kind of makes me want to root for the Broncos, because of my emotional feelings of, like, you know, my dad being like a traitor now and rooting for Carolina, because I do have respect for Peyton Manning. I think he's a great quarterback. Do I think Brady's better? Well, yeah, but I'm biased because I'm a Patriots fan.
Yep.
But, you know, I think I might be rooting for Denver. I may just take the Von Miller comments and kind of throw them to the side and be like, you know, Denver played a great game, dude. Like, they beat us. They were the better team. Yeah, they beat us, dude. So, you know, I'd like to see them kind of upset Carolina in that, because Carolina had a great record, man. Like, they almost went an undefeated season, which is an amazing feat. Like, I watched the Patriots do that undefeated season, dude. Like, I almost had, like, heart attacks when we had that undefeated season. Like, I was stressed to the max. And then to get to the Super Bowl and lose that year, like, I was devastated. So I can kind of see that end of it, too. Like, you had a great season. And get to the Super Bowl and lose, like, could really suck for all the Carolina fans. But I don't know. It kind of goes back to my dad. Like, I just want to see all those Carolina fans in agony. Well, that, and they're up 40-15, and they go for two, which I'm kind of like, what are you doing? And I understand that you got into trouble in the fourth quarter in a lot of games, and you wanted to, like, you know, not let up on teams and all. I get that. But, you know, I thought that was kind of cocky of them, too.
So I agree with all of your points. And again, you know, speaking as a division rival, I agree with all of your points. I think I'm really torn because on one hand, I kind of want to see Manning get a ring and retire. And I feel like if Manning gets a ring, that'll be his swan song. He'll retire.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But man, like you say, the Panthers have been on fire all fucking year long.
I know.
And I look at this Super Bowl and I go, it's going to go one of two ways. Either the Broncos defense is going to show up in a huge way and they're going to really rattle Cam and it's going to be a really close game.
Well, they rattled Brady, dude. And that's how you get to Brady, dude. When I watch the Patriots lose, like, I can almost like call it. When I see Brady getting rattled like that and I see what the defense is doing, I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad.
Yep.
Like, they're rattling them. If they can do that to Cam Newton, I think they have a chance. And I would like to see Peyton, you know, get his one last ring and stuff, because I think he's a great quarterback. I think he deserves it. To be honest with you, dude, if all the injuries that dude has at his age, like, I'm 39, man. Like, if you got to use HGH to, like, get over some of your injuries, whatever, you know. It's the same with, like, Deflategate. Like, if you think that the pressure in a football makes that much of a difference, like, you're smoking crack. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking about things that, like don't even matter to the outcome of the game. You know what I mean? And if you think that Peyton Manning or any other player in the NFL is the only one that's, like, used any other kind of substance to get ahead, I'm not saying it's right, but, like, the NFL is, like, I mean, it's just it's unbelievable how rampant that is, you know?
Can I just throw a statement out there and see if we agree on this, that I think it's a travesty that Eli has more rings than Peyton?
Yeah, I mean, the Giants got hot, dude. I mean, and it's the NFL, right? Like, team gets hot at a certain time, and I mean, I don't take anything away from Eli. I mean, if you play well and you win the Super Bowl, you play well and you win the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? It's that any given Sunday thing, dude. Like, I don't take away from that. I mean, yeah, you look at Manning's career, though, I can see your point. Like, you know, Peyton's got some records on him that, you know, show that he's a good quarterback, but, you know, how much of that is the team that surrounds you, the receivers that you have, you know, that kind of thing, too. But no, I can see that.
So I'm gonna throw it out there as my prediction for the Super Bowl. I'm gonna go Panthers. I'm gonna say the Panthers are gonna win 30-17.
I'm gonna say Denver, like 20-17. I think the defenses are gonna be, because I think both defenses are awesome, and I think the defenses are gonna rain. I think it's gonna be very much like the AFC Championship, where it was defenses, dude. You know what I mean? I think the Super Bowl is going to be the same way. I think everyone wants to see, like, you know, these high scoring Super Bowls. I think the defenses are going to reign, dude. You know, I think it's Cam, and the reason I say that is Cam Newton's first Super Bowl, dude. Right? Like, he's going to be a little rattled. I think he's going to be a little overwhelmed by everything, and I think you get to factor that in. And that's why I'm kind of predicting it now. Is there a part of me that's like, Carolina's just going to run the table and they're just going to break away and do awesome things? I think there's a chance of that happening too. You know what I mean? Because they had such a great season. So
You guys have a show coming up tomorrow night, Thursday. That's your normal show night. Who do you guys got going on?
That's a great question. I got to look that up.
As I throw you under the bus here, I'm going to talk a little bit while you look that up. Make sure to check out Cigar Chat tomorrow. I'm going to do my best to fill in for Logan. We've got La Jolla on, which we've never had on Cigar Chat, so I'm going to do my best to fill in Logan's big, big shoes. Make sure to check in next Tuesday. We got Pipe Dummies with some aged pipe tobacco. And next Wednesday, we're going to try and do some Padron and Stouts, which, drinking
Stouts. That can go good together.
That's going to go good. I mean, we talk about getting loose with the whiskey, but, man, when you're drinking Stouts that are like 8%, 9% plus, you're drinking 3-4 Stouts in a night, that's that show is going to be pretty loose, I think. We're going to try and get Matt, one of our mods, on for that show. Matt is a epic beer drinker. That guy has more badges and unique beers drank on Untappd than I could probably do in a lifetime.
So tomorrow night we've got Abe from Kiss My Ash Radio coming on the Stoic Geek Show, and from Smoke In, of course. And we've got Charles Rutherford from Bovita.
That'll be a good show. You can ask him some questions about winter management with Bovita Packs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Bovita is kind of like a soft sponsor of the Stoic Geek. So you'll see Bovita Packs kind of featured on the Stoic Geek Show on set and things like that. So they keep us well supplied. All our prize packs are humidified with Bovita. And, Bovita Packs are great, man. I use them all the time.
They're a no-brainer product. So tell the audience where people can find you, Paul, on social media, and where they can find the Stogie Geeks show on social media.
Sure. Go to stogiegeeks.com. That's where you can find all our social media. You can find information about all our shows. You can subscribe to all our shows. You can go to cigar-coop.com. You can subscribe to the blog. You can find all the latest information about the cigar world. You can find all the latest reviews. It's a daily blog on cigar-coop.com. So I highly encourage everyone to subscribe to that. You can use your favorite podcast catcher to subscribe to our show. If you've got an Android phone, we actually have an app on Android that you can either do the audio or the video app and get all our latest audio and video on Android. And coming this year, we're going to be on iOS as well. So we submitted the paperwork, so you have an iOS app to listen to or watch the Stoic Geeks.
Nice. So we were talking pre-show, and this is a bit of a soft announcement, but of course, you're a huge fan of cocktails. I know Robbie and his wife are huge fans of cocktails, so we're going to have you back on the show in a few weeks. We're getting back on the show, do some cocktail pairing, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
That'd be awesome, dude. Yeah, I've paired cigars with martinis, old fashions, all different kinds of bourbon drinks. I'm a really big fan of bourbon in my cocktails, and I Absolutely. Like to take cocktails that traditionally use a different kind of spirit and mix it with bourbon. So I do like a bourbon. It's called a Kentucky Mule. It's with bourbon, which is awesome. I do Tom Collins. I do a bourbon Collins. So I do all kinds of different cocktails with bourbon, which has kind of like been my kind of specialty. In the summertime, dude, I get more requests from the guys for my bourbon Collins because it's just such an awesome drink. And it's really refreshing in the summertime. So I love all the different kinds of cocktails. There's a couple of guys that come on our shows and mix cocktails for us. And I mean, they've shown me so much about mixing. I mean, they talk about Negronis and all these like weird different cocktails and different styles of Manhattans. And I've paired them all with cigars. So I hope to come on your show and talk about the ones that I really like to pair with cigars.
Giddy up. I know Rob's going to be totally down with that. Thanks very much for all of our audience for tuning in. Thanks again for everyone who tuned in via live stream. And of course, all our podcast listeners, we know you guys are out there in huge droves and we appreciate it. If you want to check out the show, check it out on podcast, check it out on iTunes. As we always say on the show, drink better, but drink less.
Thanks, everyone.